Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland. Vadim Mazursky running for Multnomah County Commissioner, friend of the show. Vadim, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate you running and staying in public service.
Well, Kristen, thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure being here. You picked perfect timing. We had a few sunny, warm days, and now it's rainy, so nice to be indoors chatting with you today.
Vadim, why did you decide to run for County Commissioner?
As most listeners probably know at this point, a couple of years ago, I ran for city council because I felt that my opponent in the race was doing a terrible job and a terrible disservice to the community here. And city council was getting a lot of blame for things like homelessness, drug addiction, mental illness in our streets, and even public safety that I learned over time were squarely the responsibility of our county. So when you're looking at all the tents that are out in the streets, the suffering that we have, that's the Joint Office of Homeless Services supposed to help with that. And that's the county's responsibility, and a huge budget goes toward that. Same thing with drug addiction, mental illness, that the county's supposed to be dealing with it. Instead, our firefighters are dealing with it, our police are dealing with it, our ambulances are dealing with it. So having seen all that, And kind of understanding what the issues are, I decided that in this race, if I were to run again, it would be for the county because that's where we need the help right now.
I think a lot of people, as you said, shift blame onto the city or just assume that it's the city of Portland's job to clean up the homelessness and grapple with things like drug addiction. Talk to us a little bit about how do we know that that's really the county's job? Is it budget? Is it money? Is there a charter? Is that literally delegated to the county somewhere?
It is. So a long time ago, there was a delegation of responsibilities between the city and the county. And the county has sort of the human services, the health services, of which drug addiction, mental illness are a big part of that, and the human services and the homelessness are part of that. The city has a contract with the county to fund the Joint Office of Homeless Services. Now, much of that money comes from the Supportive Housing Services tax that Portlanders pay. And next year, the budget for the Joint Office of Homeless Services is going to be $412 million. Now, the point in time counts show that we have about 5,000 people living in our streets. So you do the math as to how much money is being spent to address our homeless situation and how little we're getting for our money. So that was a delegation. And, there's been a lot of failures down the road. People are actually talking about reconstituting the city and the county into one entity again, sort of along the lines of what happened in San Francisco, just out of sheer frustration because what we're doing is not working. The city has a short-term plan they're trying to institute. The county has a long-term plan. But when it comes to the policies and how the money's being spent, that's up to the county commission.
How are you going to increase transparency, if you can? I mean, isn't one of the issues that we don't know where all this money's going? And if we have eyes and ears, which, certainly you and I do, it doesn't look like we're making a single dent in the homelessness issue.
And people are starting to figure it out. And hats off to the Oregonian and Willamette Week. They've been doing some amazing articles recently about the successes of other counties like Clackamas and Washington and the failures of our county commission in dealing with the exact same issues our sister counties are dealing with. And this is something that's pretty new. Before, it was kind of papered over. And as long as we pay more taxes, we get the results we need. And people are waking up and they're realizing, and the reporters are reporting on the facts. And the facts are Washington County is seeing a huge decrease in their unsheltered chronic homelessness. Why? Because they're dealing with not only the long-term planning, which is helping people get into some sort of stable housing, but also the short-term planning. How do you do the outreach to a lot of individuals? How do you ensure that they have temporary places to stay as they go into recovery or get services that they need, get on a housing waiting list? Our county is not doing that. So part of it is that, that transparency. As I mentioned, we have more money than apparently the county even knows what to do with at this point because they're way behind on spending that money. And Metro's looking into a way into clawing back some of that money because they feel that the county's not doing the adequate job in spending it.
Right.
So,
Metro's our third layer of government that comprises Washington, Clackamas, and Multnomah counties.
And for the listeners, the Metro is the organization that passed the Supportive Housing Service Tax, which has brought in hundreds of millions of dollars each year to address our homeless situation. And even Metro is saying that the county is doing a bad job in spending that money. They put the county in a corrective action plan, which the county is fighting back against. But the reporting is pretty solid on this. You know, we're not spending the money on time, but we're not getting the results that we need. You know, even the county's own auditor has issued two scathing audits of the joint office. The first one saying that the record keeping was so bad, she couldn't determine how many people were being housed. People who came in for, needle exchanges and those sort of things were counted as being housed. So she said, the record keeping is poor. The numbers that they're saying are being housed are incorrect. Do a better job. Well, and then the second report came out and said, even these contracts that are going out, we're not getting the results that we need if a provider is not meeting the contract goals. Some bureaucrat just lowers the goals. That's where we're at right now. We're not meeting those goals. And instead of actually improving and making sure we get those deliverables, we're just changing the goals and doing a lowest common denominator sort of thing. So we need that transparency. Portlanders are paying the highest tax in the country. I don't know how many of your readers, listeners are making more than $25 million, but if you're making less than $25 million, this is the highest tax base in the country in Multnomah.
$125,000 for an individual, which, mm-hmm. That encompasses, that puts you in that $25 million tax base that the New Yorkers pay.
Yeah, New Yorkers, if you make more than $25 million, New York has a higher tax base. If it's less than $25 million, Multnomah County has a higher tax base than New York City. So, people are catching on. They're like, why am I paying so much taxes, and yet we can't fix the potholes? Why am I paying so much taxes and we're having a huge drug addiction problem in the streets and people are dying? Why am I paying so much taxes and we have graffiti everywhere that we can't even clean up? Why am I paying so much taxes and if I call 911, it takes a really long time to get there and people are hiring private security because of that. So, we need that accountability. We need people to restore trust in our government. Part of that restoring the trust is having a plan that works. And that's why I'm running, because I'm the only person that has experience to actually implement plans, have policies that work. And the second thing is, let's open up the books. Hats off to Jessica Vega Peterson when she gave the money to Bybee Lakes, $1.5 million, a drop in the bucket. But she said, let's do an audit. I want to see if Bybee Lakes is spending its money well.
The one place she wants to audit, Bybee Lakes.
Exactly. Because, that's the Bybee Lakes is doing a great job and people are suspicious because of that. Well, if you want to do an audit of Bybee Lakes, let's do an audit of the Joint Office of Homeless Services. I don't know whether you've heard about this, Kristen, but Eco Northwest is an accounting firm, basically a public policy firm that wanted to do exactly that. Well, there's no partnership with the county on that, so they have to externally do their own audit of the joint office. And I sat in on a presentation where they kind of talked about how much money is being spent, quite a bit, how many organizations are getting funded, quite a lot, and they don't know where the money is going. And they pulled down the 990 forms, which are the tax forms that the nonprofits have to file. They had to pull them down themselves because they didn't get the cooperation from the Joint Office of Homeless Services. They said it would take them 3 years to figure out where the money was going, what kind of results we were getting for the money. Well, why is the county not doing that? Why do we have this outside nonprofit organization that is working to figure out the paper trail when our own county can't do that. And so my first week in office, I will ask that we do a forensic audit of the Joint Office of Homeless Services so we know where our money is going. We know what the results are. Taxpayers will be able to look at it online and see how the spending is going. And there are success stories out there, I guarantee that, but there's also failures out there. So let's make sure that, you know, we have true transparency, not the fake transparency that we're seeing right now, and that, you know, we restore our trust in government by funding the things that work and making sure that if something does not work, they either fix it or we don't fund it anymore.
Vadim, thank you. I've never heard anybody say that. Thank you so much. You finally said what we're all waiting to hear. I mean, one of the issues is, yes, it would take like 3 years without cooperation. Why wouldn't the joint office just require some kind of data and metrics in exchange for the money? It's bizarre. And the joint office, like you said, is within the county. So it's the county commissioners, if they have a majority, or the chair's responsibility to demand some sort of accountability. And I understand that, you know, right now, I think the two people who are interested in accountability who are currently on Multnomah County Commission, Sharon Myron and Julie Broom Edwards, do not have a majority to be able to do that. But this is a unique time, Vadim, because there are so many seats that are up for... Julie Broom Edwards is up for re-election, and there are other seats that are up for election to the extent... I mean, I think if you had Julie Broom Edwards, and this is just my opinion, you don't need to weigh in on this, but you, Vadim, Julie Broom Edwards, I think Vince Jones-Dixon, and if you had Jesse Burke... In my opinion, you would have that majority that you need to get that audit. I don't think Jessica Vega Peterson would be on board without it, but I think with that kind of pressure, I mean, she can go ahead and be the lone dissent. At that point, if you have a majority, don't you get that? You get it. She doesn't get to control what the hypothetical Multnomah County Commission majority decides, right?
Mm-hmm. And this is another area where the Oregonian has done a really good article about how the voices of the county commissioners have been quieted by the county chair by not scheduling things that they would want to discuss or talk about. So, you know, I'm a lawyer. I went on and, you know, did research on this. What does the county charter say? What do the board rules say? And then there's a super secret executive rule, which if you Google it, it'll take you to a county landing page that has no information. But, you know, and that's what the Oregonian and other people are saying is allowing the county chair to keep things off of the agenda if it doesn't suit, you know, her needs. Well, there's a lot of things we can do. You know, both the county charter and the board rules provide for the ability to put things on the agenda. And you know, the board rules say that anybody can put something in the agenda. All the county commissioners can, the district attorney can, the sheriff can. So if there's a conflict between the board rule and the super secret executive rule, well, you know, we get the county attorney to rectify that that conflict. But if you have three votes, well, it opens up a lot of possibilities. With three votes, you can have a special meeting and you can vote for things during that special meeting and ratify it during a normal meeting. It's open meeting like anything else. So we can discuss how the money is being spent for the fentanyl crisis, how we're addressing the deaths in our street, how we're helping people with mental illness get into treatment. We can have all those discussions at an open meeting. All you need is three votes. And right now, as you mentioned, there's Sharon Myron, there's Julie Broom Edwards. And they're not able to get those three votes. And there's four seats available in the May primary. If we get three of those seats, we'll really be able to address some of these crises that we're feeling in the streets with the urgency that they demand and not just having more meetings for the sake of meetings.
Vadim, thank you. Also, I think we need to really highlight this. When you say May, you mean next month.
Yeah, this is the difficult part because a lot of people are paying attention to the shiny new object in the room, the city council races, the mayoral races, ranked choice voting, single transferable vote. That's going to be a really interesting race, and I'm getting my popcorn ready for that. But when it comes to the county and the district attorney's race, the primary is still the normal primary where you need 51%. If you get 51% of the vote, 50% plus one, you win at the primary. And so in May 21st is going to be the primary election. And between now and then, I'm going to be really busy out there calling people, knocking on doors, fundraising so we can get information out to a lot of people whose doors I cannot personally knock on, and getting that information out, because it's going to be a critical election. I mean, I'm running for the county, so it's a little bit of patting myself in the back, but I think it's the most important election, because the district attorney, both of them have said they need a bigger budget to address the public safety needs. The sheriff has said that she needs a bigger budget. We all need to have people on the county commission that are able to fund the things that we need to improve life for people, but also make good plans down the road so our tax money is being used wisely, because so much of that money is being misspent right now. If we spend it wisely, the city wouldn't have to spend all the money that it's spending right now on safe rest villages, on these sanctioned camping sites, and all the plethora of things that the city is funding. And we can use that money to fix the potholes, to address our other needs, including parks and things like that that are underfunded.
I could not agree more. Now here's a sort of a silly question, but I think it's important. My understanding from when Pete Grabriel came on this podcast, he's running for the legislature. He's running for House Representative in Northwest Portland and downtown. And what Pete said is, and I have no reason to dispute this, he said that the data he's seen, and he's never seen anything contrary to this, is that signs matter. And they matter more in Portland than they actually do in anywhere else in the country. How do people get a sign, including me? I don't have one. How do we get one? Do we go to your website and request one?
Yeah, so you can go on votevadim.com, and there's a page where you can sign up for emails and things like that. But you can also mark off, I want a sign.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
And if anybody needs a sign, just email me or my campaign manager. Info at votevadim goes to my campaign manager. Vadim at votevadim goes directly to me, and I will get you a sign. Yay. We have window placards. You can put something in your window as well. This is a time for real change in our city and our county. So we all need to start to get together, contact our neighbors, talk about the issues, and making sure we're electing people that are willing to make that change, and not people that are going to stand up for the status quo, because the status quo is not working. We have too many deaths in our streets. We have too much crime. We have too many negative effects and negative impacts of failed policies. So, you know, vote for candidates that are competent, candidates that have experience, candidates that are willing to make those tough choices and changes that'll make your life better, and not candidates that are standing up for the status quo and saying, give us more time, things are working, trust us, don't trust your lying eyes.
Vadim, how are you going to build a bridge between the city and the county? Because I think that's really key, according to Sharon Myron, and I have no reason to dispute this. And it looks like this is what happens. The city writes the county a blank check that goes into the quote-unquote joint office of homeless services. But of course the city, I mean, Ted Wheeler threatened to take that money back. Mingus Maps, I think very bravely and correctly, voted to defund the county, to not give money to the county, because we don't know where it's going. And as the lawyer who represented the disabled people in the, which you so kindly assisted with as a disability law judge and somebody who cares about disabled people, as a lawyer, John DiLorenzo, who represented all these disabled people in the lawsuit against the city, said, one hallmark of dysfunction in the city of Portland is we are paying the county to hand out tents to people dwelling on the street. I mean, clearly engaged in the same things that the county is supposed to fix, right? They're engaged in drug abuse and very severe untreated mental illness, because I mean, I think it's most of us know it'd be pretty darn difficult to sleep on a sidewalk without a very severe drug addiction or mental illness. And these are people whose lives have become unmanageable. Then we're paying the city to sweep these things away. I mean, that is the hallmark to me of dysfunction. It encapsulates it so well. So, Vadim, what can you do to build a bridge with the city of Portland? It seems like we don't have one.
I mean, you've opened the door to so many conversations there, but you're absolutely right. The city and the county are now working together and have not for a long time. You know, a clear example has been the winter shelters that the emergency shelters that opened up during the ice storm. And they closed early because of a, you know, policy that wasn't a good one about what temperature needed to be there. And, you know, and people were let back on the streets during very cold weather and ice. Well, the result of that was the county started blaming the city because the city didn't provide enough volunteers. The city, in turn, you know, said that the county was mismanaging its shelter space. So imagine that. Imagine our mayor's office saying that the county was mismanaging its shelter space and how what that would take.
And right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, I mean, telling.
It was a tragedy, and it is telling. And so for a long time now, we've had different ideas about what we need to address homelessness. The city is trying to, you know, address the human suffering and also address the crime and the negative social impact and the negative environmental impact with the camping that we're seeing right now. The county's been doing a housing first model, which is let's build as much housing as we can, provide services, but they expect people to, you know, pack up their tents, find the services, get into drug addiction treatment, get into a housing waiting list on their own. There's just not that outreach right now. The city, on the other hand, is saying that's not working. We're seeing just negative impacts. You know, the fire bureau I learned recently, they've endorsed me. And during the endorsement interview, they said that, thank you. And they said that 7,000 calls for overdoses in 1 year, and most of those in homeless community. It's just not working to let people live in the streets without getting them to the services that they need. So the city is like, okay, well, we're opening up safe rest villages. We're opening up sanctioned campsites, these new task sites or whatever they call them in the Clinton Triangle and some other areas. And they're working. People go there. The service providers are in that one area. People get linked to drug addiction, mental health services, housing services. A third of them go into permanent housing because where they before were left in the streets, now they're at a place where they can get those services. But why are we at odds? Why is the city doing the short-term fixes that we all know we need and the county is not joining hands with them? So we need to work together. And I'm proud to say that I've been endorsed by three of the mayoral candidates, three of the top mayoral candidates. So Mingus Maps, Renee Gonzalez, Keith Wilson have all endorsed me because they know that on the county, I will be able to work with them and get things done rather than work against them, which is what we've been seeing for the last few years.
That's a great point, and congratulations on that as well. I think that's, you know, Keith Wilson, my understanding from listening to him talk is more of a housing-focused person, and I think the fact that he endorsed you is a great sign that he thinks that you are going to be able to assist the city with, I mean, I think you seem to have a pretty good relationship with Mingus Maps and Renee Gonzalez. Regardless, but I also think it's very telling that Keith Wilson endorsed you because that shows that he thinks that you can build the kind of bridge that the city's going to need to deal with things like homelessness, and he's very focused on homelessness.
Yeah, I admire Keith tremendously. You know, people ask me how I manage all the things that I do, and it's sometimes, you know, drinking directly from the fire hydrant. Keith is drinking directly from Niagara Falls. He's out there. He flew to Boise to talk to the mayor of Boise about how they address their homeless situation. You might have heard that the Ninth Circuit had a Boise decision that the city claims prevents him from doing some stuff. Well, he's out there talking to individuals. He went to Amsterdam to see what they're doing with their drug policies, went to other areas that have been successful in addressing homelessness and brought that back here. He has a business, but he has a nonprofit. I don't know if there's many individuals in our area that are more conversant with all the possibilities and how to fix our different crises that we're facing here other than Keith. And he actually took me to a shelter a couple years ago where it was a church, Church of the Nazarene, and they actually have a little pod village, but they allow people to sleep in that church in the evenings. When I arrived there, there were tents outside that church as well. So the question is, if you're letting people sleep here, you know, warm bed, out from the cold, out from the rain, why are there still tents outside the church right across the street? Well, the answer was, you know, we used to let everybody in no matter what, drug use or otherwise, and then we there was some aggressive behavior. We couldn't have that because it was impacting people that just needed a safe place to stay. And the people that are camping outside are the people that cannot get away from the drug dealers long enough to camp on the inside. You know, drug addiction is one of the main driving forces of our homeless situation. People say it's a cost of living and housing. Now, for sure, we need cheaper housing in Portland and Multnomah County. But if you're addicted to fentanyl, addicted to methamphetamines, you know, it doesn't matter how cheap the housing is, that's going to be the driving force. So talking with Keith, talking to people that he works with, you gain an understanding of what the real live issues are, not these philosophical issues that people talk about, whether, you know, somebody has, you know, the right to spend time on the streets, but the fact that these people are addicted to something that is destroying their lives and they're not getting help from the county. They're not getting the outreach workers. And what we need to do is get them to the help that they need rather than expecting them to help themselves. Yeah, it's a tough one because, you know, I also did a ride-along more recently with Loving One Another. It's a nonprofit that works with helping people get off the streets. And we pulled up next to Director's Park, got out of there. There was an alcove of three individuals smoking fentanyl. And then on the sidewalk was a woman in some sort of mental distress. It was a very cold day, raining. She was barefoot. Her pants rolled up to her knees, was not wearing rain clothing, had a blanket draped over herself, but it was a very wet day. And so, you know, when we pulled over the people in the alcove smoking fentanyl, two of them ran off. One of them stayed there. There was the evidence of drug use right there. So, the guy was holding a pipe, in fact. And then we spoke with a woman and, at first she was reticent to speak with the service providers, but then they said, well, we can get you some food. We can take you to Blanchet House, get you a cab to Blanchet House where you can get some food. You can dry out. There's some clothing there that you can have that is, you know, better for this kind of weather, shoes, whatever you may need. They called around, found a shelter bed, which is another odd thing. We don't really have a resource for knowing where the beds are available. Every morning, these providers have to call around and figure out where the beds were available because our county's not keeping track. Well, anyway, so there was a shelter bed available. Talked to this individual, and she's like, okay, yeah, I'll take you up on that. I'll take a cab to Blanchet House, get some food, get a hot shower, and then have a place to sleep. Well, cab arrives. She gets in the cab. The cab drops her off in Blanchet House, and she just leaves. The pull of the drugs were more important for her than a warm bed at night, food, and good clothing. That's the difficulty that we're facing right now, and that's a difficulty that we're not addressing directly.
What do we need to do with that?
So there's a lot of options that are out there that are working. So Boise, Houston, Miami, there's a lot of cities that have done what we seem to be unable to do. So there's things that we can take from all those cities. And if this podcast were about 4 hours long, we can get into it. Or if you bring Keith Wilson on, I'm sure he'll discuss all that directly. But, you know, there's...
When you're a county commissioner, this is going to be your purview.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, let's say Washington County, what did they do that's been successful that's not successful here? One, they got people off the streets and into temporary shelters. So they built out their temporary shelters, which we're not doing a good job of right now. And we're expecting the city to pay a lot of money that the county should be paying. And then divided the city into quadrants, and they went from quadrant to quadrant to quadrant and got people off the streets and into those shelters, which is not what we're doing here. Oregonian did a study on how many people actually on the streets had outreach workers, and it was a tiny fraction of the people. Most people said no one's ever approached them for housing, for mental health, drug addiction services, any of that. So they divided the city. They got people off the streets and into those shelters. And at those shelters, they provided these services, again, detox, mental health, housing. And then they transitioned people into housing. So they've said, you know, mission accomplished. We got people off the streets. Well, guess what? Here in Multnomah County, it's not mission accomplished. In the same couple years that both Clackamas County and Washington County have seen a huge decrease in their homeless and their chronic homeless use, we're seeing still huge increases year after year. So, you know, even if we did what Washington County did, which is built for zero, basically, it's, you know, addressing things one block at a time, keeping track of people, using a by name list so we know what the difficulties are, what the impediments have been in the past, what kind of services have been provided to each person living in our streets, what they need, and keep them in the continuum of care. Well, we're not doing that either, but Washington County is. So, you know, I hate to say it, but even if we emulated Washington County, we'd do better than we have here. If we emulated what they did in Houston, which is make sure all these organizations that are being funded by the county are working together rather than working separately, that siloed thing you hear a lot about, we'd have a lot improvements as well. We're not doing that, and I've talked to the folks over here together as well, and they'll admit that there's siloing going on, and the county is not doing its job in making sure that people are, you know, helping individuals on the streets transition into stability. Rather, everyone is doing kind of a piecemeal approach. So get everybody in, find out what everybody's doing, making sure that there's a continuum of care rather than, you know, a bunch of nonprofits providing clothing, a bunch of nonprofits providing water, and nobody providing, you know, housing services. So, and I'm exaggerating there a little bit, but that's kind of what's happening right now.
Are you going to, as if you're elected county commissioner, are you going to try to work with the other counties like Washington County, Clackamas County that are making some headway on this issue, like homelessness and honestly, like drug addiction?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the number one thing we have to do. It's a regional problem. You know, we can't have it be where Washington County is doing something that's working, and perhaps the people that don't like what is happening in Washington County are moving to Multnomah County. We know some of that is happening. Same thing for Clackamas County. We need to be on the same page, have similar policies. If it's working over there.
There are people going from Washington to Multnomah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's people going from all parts of Oregon. So there's a point in time count a couple of years ago where they asked individuals, were you homeless before you came to Multnomah County? Did you come to Multnomah County and become homeless afterwards? Were you already living here, rather, and became homeless? And so, you know, a third of the people did not respond at all. They didn't answer that question. Of the ones that did, one third said they were homeless before they came here. One third said that they were here and then became homeless. So if you take, you know, the respondents that actually answered the question, half of them were homeless prior to coming to Multnomah County. And that's all self-reporting. So, you know, I mean, who really knows? But we know that people are coming from elsewhere. We know people are coming from California. You know, whether anecdotal or the point in time counts, we know it's happening. Now we're not addressing it. We're pretending that everybody was living here, and then, you know, whatever the narrative of the day is, that, you know, the pandemic happened and people lost their housing. And there's certainly some truth to that to an extent, even though there were moratoriums on evictions. But we also know that we have individuals coming here, whether it's for the drug use or the lax enforcement of policies or what have you. Maybe they were, someone bought a bus ticket for them elsewhere and said, you know, we're going to arrest you or send you to Portland. You have that choice. We know that's happening. And you got to be real. You got to be honest about those type of facts. And, you know, we are where we are, but let's all work together rather than working separately. And that's what I bring to the table. You know, I've worked with the community for a long time, with neighborhood associations, with nonprofits, with individuals running for office right now. Very proud that some of the people you mentioned earlier running for the county, Jesse Burke and Vince Jones Dixon, have endorsed my campaign. They're running in different districts. But that idea of, yes, together we can make a difference. Separately, we're going to be spinning our wheels like we have been for the last few years.
Vadim, talk to us about what district you are in so people know if you're going to be on their ballot.
So it's District 1. It's all the west side of Multnomah County, west side of Portland, west of the river, and then southeast, inner southeast, up to about 40th, 42nd Street, depending on where it is. It kind of meanders around there. But so west side and central southeast.
Is that Sharon Myron's seat?
Exactly, Sharon Myron's seat currently. So she's termed out, and I think there's five candidates right now running for that seat. And, you know, I'm the only candidate that has the experience. I'm the only candidate that's already working in this field. And I'm the only candidate that is impartial and not coming from organizations that are advocates for certain things. So, you know, I think being a lawyer, being a judge, all these things will really help me in developing policies that work rather than coming from an advocacy background where you're already kind of jaundiced in what you think the solutions are.
And when you say that you're working in the field, talk about what the experience is that you're going to bring to the table specifically. What have you done and seen and what can you draw upon?
Mm-hmm. So I'm president of the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association. I'm the president of what's right now called Neighbors West Northwest, but is very soon going to be the District 4 Coalition of 33 neighborhood associations, 31 voting neighborhood associations, but 33.
And you helped put that together, right?
Right.
That coalition.
Right.
Yes.
And so part of this is we've, are trying to tackle the issues of the day, whether it be public safety, whether it be advocacy around the needs of our homeless community and addressing those needs. We've held several forums. Coincidentally, the first forum was on how the city, the county, and the state can work better together. This was before we started seeing all this news coverage about how they're not working together and this finger pointing that we're seeing.
And Dan Ryan came to that, right? The head of civic life for the city?
Well, he's working with the neighborhood associations. That one was with JVP, and the mayor was there, and then okay. There's a representative from the governor's office was there. The governor herself was not there, but
and
there was
a
representative.
And you put that together.
Yes.
That's great.
And so that was a few months ago. And then we've held since then forums on mental health. We got 500 people on Zoom to talk about what is obvious in our streets right now. People with mental health crises that are not getting the help that they need and what we can do about that. One of the main driving forces of homelessness. And then we had another forum on Measure 110, where we asked people to advocate for their needs. We had presenters there from the individuals that were working at that point in time to change Measure 110, to amend it so we can get people the help that they need. We also had people, proponents of Measure 110 in the service sector industry that, were saying that maybe we didn't need to amend it, that sort of stuff. But it was a discussion where different views are brought to the table. And now we're forming an organization of neighborhood associations, of businesses, of faith-based community people who are out there separately working to address homelessness, but uniting them together. So again, working together, we can get a lot more done than working separately. And that's the future right now. I mean, a few years ago, it might have been a little bit easier to solve some of these issues. But right now, it's not going to be just the county or just the city. We need the private sector to come in. People like Vanessa Sturgeon, who has an office building that's not being used and is converting it to a transition center where people can detox, have some stability, and then go into housing in that general area. Private sector doing what it needs to do to help out Portland. We need to partner with that rather than, kind of an our way of the highway approach the county's been doing. So working with those individuals has really given me an understanding of what the possibilities are, what is already working out there. Bybee Lakes, Ellen Evans, the director over there, has endorsed me as well because they're working and I understand what that is. And let's partner with those organizations and make sure that they get the resources that they need. It's not a rocket science, but we need to have somebody out there championing, pragmatic, progressive, but pragmatic approach to solutions.
Congratulations. That's a big endorsement because Alan Evans, who runs Bybee Lakes, understands how to fix homelessness and has been boots on the ground in regard to getting people off the streets and getting them connected with the services that they need. His success rate is, as
87%.
Far as I know, mm-hmm. As far as I know, in the city of Portland, surrounding areas, unprecedented, really. Yeah.
And $23 a night for individuals to be housed at Bybee Lakes versus $230 a night for people to be housed at a Safe Rest Village. So, 10 times more to house them on public property in a shack without drug addiction services versus Bybee Lakes, where you get them a job, where you get drug addiction services, where people learn those good habits that you need to continue living. Because face it, if you've been on the streets for an average of 6 years now, which is our chronic homeless population, At that point in time, you're no longer paying bills. You're no longer, you know what it takes to go to work and do all that kind of stuff. You need to have some sort of stability in the transition, which is what Bybee Lakes allows. There's an idea being floated around, as long as we build our way out of this, create enough housing, enough apartments, that we can just put people into it. That's not going to work. You know, it's not working in New York. There's a lot of people that died because they were put into apartments without the services that they needed, without the help they needed along the way. But Bybee Lakes is doing a great job about that. So I'm very honored that, you know, Ellen Evans has endorsed my campaign. And I fully want to work with people that are having success for much lower cost than the failures that we're funding right now.
Vadim, what can you do once, if you're county commissioner, what can you do about mental health? Because that is also within the purview of the county, as you astutely pointed out, and as Sharon Myron has talked about numerous times. You know, she is a ER doctor, and she's been very concerned about mental health and trying to grapple with that. What is it that you think you can do if you are elected county commissioner?
So the state is going to help a little bit. Right now, we have a lot of people generally in our community, they're not getting the services that they need. But also, you know, more specifically, I think on most people's minds are the individuals they see on the streets that may be walking around talking to themselves, sometimes sleeping naked in the cold weather. These things that we know are a mental illness that people pass by and they wonder why someone is not addressing it. Well, it's partially not addressed because of some philosophical reasons, but partially not addressed because the standard in Oregon for civilly committing someone for 72 hours for 3 days to get them into some sort of stability, you know, get them medications if they need that, get them medical help if they need that, is very high. It's the highest in any state of the country. So you have to be in imminent danger to yourself or somebody else, which has been interpreted to mean that you're about to physically hurt yourself or about to physically hurt somebody else, not even threatening. So you could be walking around with a machete or these things that go on, and that's just menacing. That's not going to get you into a mental health hold. You have to be actively trying to physically assault somebody or hurt yourself. So the legislature is trying to lower that so we can actually put people who have schizophrenia, half of whom do not realize they actually have a mental illness, into some sort of stability where we can triage them, get them services, put them into a place where perhaps they can make decisions for themselves and get them the help that they need. So that's coming our way. By the way, my main opponent is opposing that, increasing that ability as the legislature is trying to do for the civil commitment. So that's coming our way where we can get people into services. We need to get more service practitioners out there. So there's ways of doing that through OHSU, through Unity, building that public-private partnership where we get people who might be, you know, interning, who might be in medical school, to help out with our crises, you know, treat it like with the urgency that we need. We don't have enough service providers. There's not enough people that want to deal with that population because it's very difficult. So we got to build that up. And then just that long-term care, which is not leaving people on their own, whether you're housed or unhoused, and expect you to seek those services. We have to have those services readily available and keep you in those services until you're stable, until you can lead your life with the help that's being provided. And that's just not happening. We don't have the outreach workers right now. We're letting people fend for themselves, and that's another failure of our county.
Yeah, I mean, that Multnomah County, quote-unquote, behavioral health center, I mean, we saw that front and center. It was not staffed, seemingly, in my opinion, by the right people, and there were a fair amount of articles about it. And in fact, the county shut it down for a certain period of time because they just couldn't manage it.
Yeah, they were shut down because I believe there were drugs being sold inside the center. There was like some sexual escapades going on between the workers there. I think there might have been some assaults as well. You know, it's a very difficult population that we live with. And so, you know, hats off to anybody working in that industry. But, you know, the alternative seems to be leave them on the streets for everybody else to deal with. And so, you know, one is, you know, is the behavioral health center the right place for those type of services where you have what we saw was a lot of tents pop up around there, drug dealing going outside. People were trying to document it about how people would enter the center, come outside, buy some drugs, go back in the center. There was a whole industry that formed around there. and that neighborhood was suffering. I mean, I walked by there, and there was a Comcast, I think, as an office right next to that. It looks like a jail. I mean, they had to put bars around their windows. There was just a lot of crime going on because the county built this thing, but then they didn't have all the necessary practices in place to make sure that it was safe for the rest of the community. Oppose that with what the mayor is doing right now with the temporary shelter space and you know, Clinton Triangle is going to be built out in a few more places, including Multnomah Village. But, you know, the provider over there is working with the neighborhood associations, is working with the business associations. So if there's some illicit activity going on, they call the provider and then they get on top of that and make sure it doesn't happen. It's that partnership that, you know, works versus a partnership where it's my way or the highway again that does not work. So if you're going to be putting the Behavioral Health Center next to six hotels, and the fact that, you know, their residents over there, their visitors to Portland were not safe. Well, you know, make sure that you make it safe instead of disregarding the needs of the greater Portland community. We know it can work because we're seeing it work at the Clinton Triangle. You know, I talked to the neighborhood associations around there, the Hand, the House of Abernathy and the Kearns, and they actually, Brooklyn, they actually like what's going on there because they're a part of the solution. They're working with the provider out there on what the needs are. They know where the homeless people are. They know where the drug dealing is going on, where the criminal activity is versus the people that actually need help. And they're getting together. They're able to manage those issues. So there's not, you know, encampments and drug dealing going around the task site, and that inside they're getting the services that they need. So I think a third of the people is what I read that stayed at that sanctioned camping area, which is actually a little village area, but have gone on to permanent housing because once again, you know, get people off the streets where they're being victimized, where they're hurting themselves and other people, get them into a place where you have those services, stabilize them, keep on providing those services over time. And then when they're ready, get them into housing. That's what works. We're just not implementing it citywide.
Vidium, let's say you are elected county commissioner and God forbid you don't have a majority. So, you know, maybe you get one other person who agrees that we've got to change things around here. Maybe you get Julie Broom Edwards, maybe you get Vince Jones-Dixon, maybe you get Jesse Burke, but you only get one of them. What are you going to do about this ballooning budget issue at the county? I mean, I really applauded Sharon Myron for just voting no on the budget. According to her, that budget is passed out to the commissioners by the chair with very little notice. I don't know if you saw the photo. She gave me a photo of it, or if you've actually seen it physically. She brought it to the meeting. It's the size of a phone book. She said if she wanted to, I mean, even if she had a year, there's no way that even with the staff she has, which isn't legion, but she does have staff, that they could work their way through that budget. She said most of it's a cut and paste job. What can we do about that?
Now, let's just say, there's certain people that are running right now that feel that we could work together to make the instant changes that we need to happen. And I do think that the changes can come pretty quick in a positive way. Portland, Multnomah County, a year after election will look very different than what it looks like right now. There's obvious changes we can make that are working elsewhere. Now, that being said, if you don't have like-minded individuals, you know, that's it's up to me to make sure that the policies that I advocate for and the relationships that I build with whomever it is gets elected into office transcends, you know, petty politics. It has to be about getting results. It has to be about getting help to the people that need it. It has to be make sure that we have transparency and accountability where taxpayers know that their money is being put to good use. And it has to be rational and not ideologically based. And so I think most people understand that. There needs to be, you know, certain, you know, bridges built no matter what. I'll work with whoever is elected to the county commission. You know, I've been in organizations where certainly, you know, my view of, you know, certain policies are different from other people in those organizations. And you learn how to find that, you know, common interest. I mean, we all want the best for Portland. We all want the best for Multnomah. We all want our kids to be able to walk around the streets without fear of, you know, crime or drug use interfering with our young individuals. We all want good schools. I mean, there's a lot of commonality here that is universal and not just, you know, neighborhood by neighborhood or Portland versus other cities. And you build upon that. So I'll work with whomever. We just need, you know, some people that are willing to look rationally at what the problems are, look rationally at the solutions, and figure out what the answer is. That's all I'm asking for.
Is there a way to stop this cut and paste job that's the size of a phone book from just sliding on through every year? And by the way, adding more money to it. I mean, it's bigger than ever. $3.5 billion with a B dollars.
Yeah, I mean, the process is out there. So the county chair gets the funding requests from all the departments and they work with it. You know, that part is not terribly transparent, but you can make it transparent. So once again, with three votes, you can get special meetings where you can discuss any of this. So you have your normal budget meetings that are set up. But if there's anything that is screaming that it needs more attention, with three votes in the county commission, you can do that. You can get that information earlier on. So, you know, by the time it hits the public, it's already pretty much set in stone, because changing it on the tail end is difficult because the money's already been allocated amongst the different departments. But getting access to what that information is early on, I mean, you know, I refuse to believe that our elected officials in the county commission have absolutely no authority and they're just sitting there the day of these meetings voting without any background. You have to be more proactive. You have to have better planning. You have to understand what the issues were the previous year that are keeping you from being successful and change those and not letting continue from year to year. And yeah, that takes work. I mean, that takes long nights. But, you know, I'm a person that stays up late and does a lot of work, and that's what I'll be doing on the county commission as well.
How is ranked choice voting, if at all, going to impact this election? And what do people need to know in regard to civic education when they go to vote for the, let's just talk about the county commissioners right now.
Mm-hmm. So this year is the last year we'll have the normal kind of elections we've had in the past, which is a primary. And if anybody gets 50% of the vote plus one, you get elected. If nobody gets 50%, then it goes to the general election. 2 years from now, it'll be ranked choice voting of the type that we have in other cities in the United States, where you know, people's votes can be transferred from one candidate to the next, depending on how they rank. And then you know, the city for council is going to have a very special version of that, single transferable vote. Your audience has probably heard a little bit about that, although I think there's a lot of confusion. And but this is the last year that the county is going to have the typical vote. So, you know, come out and vote in May. You know, if you like what you're hearing right now, contact your neighbors and tell them, you know, Vadim is a good candidate. Go to my website, votevadim.com, sign up for newsletters, sign up for a lawn sign, contribute if you can. I got to, you know, contact over 50,000 people individually one way or the other. And quite a few more by mail. So, we need to get that outreach going, but yeah, this is, the normal kind of election. Now for the city, that's going to be in November. So there's no city elections, in May, unlike the county and the DA's election. And at that point in time, I mean, I'm going to be, you know, watching the TV with some popcorn like everybody else. I think it's going to be a really interesting election for many, many reasons. But this single transferable vote is a very unique form of ranked choice voting. And, you know, I hope it turns out that we get enlightened people that represent, you know, all kinds of communities that are willing to work together. It's hard to tell based on the voting system exactly how it'll play out. And I think there will be some surprises, but, you know, the county for the time being is traditional voting.
So this year it will be traditional voting. Next year or next cycle.
Mm, 2 years from now.
So 2 years from now, it's ranked choice, but there's no single transferable vote for county.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Now the single transferable vote, you know, you are our resident expert on a lot of this stuff because you spent some time on the Charter Commission, and I always get questions about this. Anytime somebody gets a whiff that you're coming on, what, if anything, based on your understanding of this city charter, stepping away from your county, your county election for 1 minute, what, if anything, do people who are voting for city councilors, what do they need to know about their ballot? Because we need some civic education around this, do we not?
Yeah, oh, we definitely need it. And what we're seeing right now is that the city's only going to be focusing on certain regions of Portland to do that outreach. They deem that some parts of Portland needed more education efforts than other parts of Portland, depending on voting trends. I mean, that's a good question, right? I mean, you know, for me, everybody needs to understand the system because that's what democracy is rooted on, is, you know, and a well-informed democracy is what we need in order to make good choices. But, you know, the theory is that there are some parts of Portland that have had low turnout in the past, and so therefore they need extra help and education in understanding the system. And that's true, but there's also a lot of other people that are very confused about this. So I think what people need to understand is, you know, you'll get a ballot in the mail, you'll be able to mark, you know, six, you know, rank people 1 to 6 right now on you know, District 4, the west side, and, you know, a little bit of Central East Side, Eastmoreland and things like that. That's part of District 4. There's, I think, 19 candidates right now, maybe even 20 at this point. So you'll have a lot of candidates, and it's going to be very difficult to, you know enough about all of them. Mm-hmm. But if you don't vote for six of them, then it's possible that your ballot might be discarded if your first place vote doesn't actually...
Is that
actually,
true? Mm-hmm. You have to vote for six?
If you want to optimally use it, because what, you know, for instance, let's take what happened in Alaska with their senatorial election over there.
Oh, God.
You know, they had the normal ranked choice voting, not the single transferable vote. But, you know, Alaska is known as a Republican state, but they elected a Democrat because it turns out that when people voted, they are using ranked choice voting. A lot of people only voted for one choice. And so their votes didn't transfer. If their one choice did not come in first, then obviously they had no second choice since they voted for one. So their vote didn't transfer. Now, you know, people herald it as a victory for Democrats, which is all good and all. You know, I agree it's nice to elect people that are progressive and all that. But at the same time, you got to realize that the opposite can happen in any city. Like if you think you have progressive values, but you don't vote 1 through 6 or liberal values or whatever you want to call them, then, you know, a candidate that's an extreme candidate on either end might get elected. So the reason why you want to vote for as many people as possible, which is, you know, I think is going to be 6. I'm not sure whether they've finalized those rules or not, but is because if your first place vote doesn't, you know, come out as a winner, your second place vote doesn't, your third place, well, maybe your 5th or 6th will be enough to help somebody win. But if you don't vote for all 6 and you vote for, let's say, only 1 candidate or 2 candidate, if they don't come in one of the top choices where your vote actually matters, then your vote gets discarded because your 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th place votes don't count. So, you know, with single transferable vote, you know, if anybody gets more than 25% of the vote, they're automatically elected. If they get less, then this math formula comes in where, you know, anybody gets more than 25%, some of their votes get transferred down, and then last place, their votes get moved to the second choice on the ballot, then last place after that, and so on and so on. So you'll have round after round. If you have 20 people running, you know, you'll have something like 19 rounds of people, or maybe 17 or 16. But anyways, you'll have rounds where people's votes get transferred from, you know, the last place to the next person, and once again, last place to the next person, until you get 3 individuals with more than 25% of the vote. So very important to, you know, do your homework, know who it is that you're voting for, at least the top few candidates. But if possible, if you can do enough homework, and it'll take a little bit, honestly, with that many candidates, rank as many as you can so that your vote definitely counts. And now I think candidates will probably run on slates. So there'll be some candidates that have similar views of what they want to do for the city, how they want to work together. We're seeing a little bit of that right now, these alliances being formed across districts. So there's candidates that are helping each other from, you know, District 4 and District 3, helping each other with fundraising, you know, doing joint activities. But we'll probably see more of that as we get closer to election point, where candidates will say, well, vote for me, number one, but vote for this other candidate, number two. Vote for this other candidate, number three. We saw that in New York when they switched to ranked choice voting, not the single transferable vote, but straight up ranked choice voting, that you got these alliances that formed to try to help each other win. So if one of you doesn't come in, you know, in the top place, at least you get the votes from somebody else that has similar views to yours. And we'll probably see that here as well.
I mean, Vinny, I am very troubled because I'm getting conflicting information here. Some people are telling me, do not rank people you don't want to see on city council. When will we know whether we need to do this, rank these six people, or whether we don't rank people we absolutely don't want to see on city council? When will this be finalized?
Well, I mean, that's absolutely true. If there's a candidate you don't want to get elected, don't put them on, you know, fifth or sixth place either, because they might get your vote. So definitely don't vote just for the sake of voting.
So that's
important. Figure there's, you know,
if you can find six good ones, do the six.
Right.
Or just do the good ones you can find.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping everybody's going to be able to find six. I mean, I can already pick six candidates on the west side that I would rank. Now there's candidates that I really hope will win, because I know that they have good values. I know that they have the experience, which I think is very key. We've elected a lot of people with no experience in the government positions, and it's been devastating.
We certainly have.
You know, so that's one of the things I look at. You know, what have they done? Where have they been? Are they advocating only for a special interest, or have they been working for things that are, you know, citywide or different communities, bringing people together? You know, that's certainly a criteria I look at. And I'm hoping each district, and I'm not paying as much attention to, you know, districts 1, 2, and 3, although there's people, I think, in each of those districts that are supporting my campaign. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And if you can find six, wonderful. And if you can't, don't vote for someone you don't want to be in office. But I think you'll have a pretty big menu. It's just a question of, you know, how many articles can you read? How many websites can you visit? You know, how many, you know, our neighborhood associations.
How many podcasts can you listen to?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Vadim, are you doing house parties or anything like that? Like, let's say somebody listening wants to throw you a fundraiser. Can they just go ahead and fill out the form on your website?
Well, okay. So, funding is going to be really key. Right now, there's just a lot of candidates out there. And so we're all fighting for the same group of people that are contributing. And it's more difficult than I thought. You know, I fundraised really well in the city council, but right now, like, there's 20 people running for city council, there's mayoral candidates, and everybody's hitting the same people up for it. So if you would love to do a fundraiser for me, or even just get me in front of like a group of people, your neighbors, you know, for coffee, whatever it is, as long as it's a decent group of individuals, I'll show up and we'll talk. Individually, feel free to email me and I'll respond to it, but, you know, time is short. So,
yeah, you don't have a lot of time.
Yeah. Just email me directly, Vadim@votevadim.com. I'll get you in touch with my campaign manager, Scott Rao. I have a really great campaign consultants. We'll figure out a way to get you involved, whatever that might be. If you want to help out and, you know, knock on some doors, would love that. If you want a lawn sign, we can make that happen. That's all on the website. You can mark whatever you want, but
what do you need the most? Like, let's say somebody out there is listening and is going, okay, what is the number one thing that you need that people out there can do?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it depends on each individual. The campaign needs money. There's no question about that. So in order for us to do all the mailings we need to do, and I say that because this really is a campaign between me, who is trying to do practical solutions to change things for the better, and the status quo. My main opponents in this race are proponents of the status quo. They've been fighting against some of these changes that either the legislature is trying to enact or things that we need to have happen. They're getting support of individuals that are part of that status quo system. You know, so some of these organizations that are benefiting from the status quo. And to change that is going to be difficult, because some of these organizations have volunteers and manpower of their own, where they can put people on the streets, knock on doors. So from our standpoint, you know, we're already organizing, canvassing, and things like that. But to get to the most people, we need to do phone banking. We need to do mailings, as many mailings as possible between now and Election Day. So money is the key. You can contribute $568 to the campaign, but any amount of money helps.
That's the limit, $568. But you're saying the number one thing you can do is donate. So if somebody has even just $5, $10, whatever, you appreciate every dial.
Exactly. Exactly. It's all going to help. It's all going to make a difference. In the end, you know, whether it's one person that contributes $568 or 25 people that contribute $20, I mean, it's going to end up to the same thing. It's going to make a difference. So everybody out there that's listening to this can make a difference. If you can get me in front of, you know, a few people and, you know, I'll talk about the issues and what we need to do and we can do a fundraiser. That's wonderful. If you can email your friends and say, hey, go to votevadim.com, donate if you can, sign up for some lawn signs, that's going to help as well. I mean, it really is a transformative time for Portland. We're very much at a tipping point and we can make changes for the better, or we can keep doing what we've been doing for the last few years, which in my mind has been a failure. And so, you know, there's a lot of seats for the county commission. Certainly there's a lot of seats for city council. City council is going to take a little bit of time to, you know, get their footing. County commission is where we can make a lot of difference right now, because once again, even public safety, you know, they're in charge of the DA's budget, the sheriff's budget, the jail budget,
yes.
Long-term policy. They work with the judges. When you hear this revolving door where people get arrested over and over and over just to be back in the streets, sometimes drug dealers, there was an article not long ago about a drug dealer that was arrested 12 times for selling fentanyl and went back to the exact same place every single time to sell fentanyl again because he was never kept in jail. Those sort of policies are ones that the county is deeply involved in formulating, working with the judges, working with the DA's office. So if you want changes from people that are drug addicted in the streets, people with mental illness in the streets, all the way down to, you know, whether your car is getting broken into over and over in your neighborhood, the county commission is going to be able to help as long as you elect some people that are willing to work together and make some tough choices.
Yeah, I think that's really important. So anybody who is interested, like Vadim said, in things like homelessness, public safety, mental health, including mental illness, that's all within the purview of the county. So really, please focus some efforts on the county. I'm not saying don't pay attention to the city, but the county is responsible for, according to polling, things that Portlanders seem to care the most about. And if any of you have listened to that Nicole Buescher episode, she's the head of the corrections union for, she's the head of the corrections union. And as everybody knows, you know, what she's saying is they're just not holding anybody and they don't have funding for jail beds that are just going unused, hundreds. So, and in fact, as she also said, the county is cutting, the county commissioners, so this is the seat Vadim is running for, they are cutting that budget every single year. They ask them to come up with more cuts. I mean, with almost $4 billion, that doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to me. Vadim, your race is nonpartisan, correct?
Correct.
Okay, people are going to want to know these things, so I'm just going to ask them. Are you a Democrat?
I am.
Are you pro-choice?
Yes.
Great. That's really what people want to know. The other thing that I think is really important is that a lot of people out there, you all are independents, you're the NAVs, you're the non-affiliated voter. You got your voter registration when you went to the DMV with the motor voter law. Most, as far as I know, I think Portlanders are non-affiliated voters if they're not Democrats. And what I want you all to know is that doesn't matter here. It doesn't matter for city and it doesn't matter for county. And in my opinion, all politics is local. It really is. I mean, I have really focused on local politics. And so I understand that you feel disenfranchised because you can't vote for the governor, you can't vote for the president, et cetera, if you're not affiliated. County and city, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And let me just, you know, I don't know if we're wrapping up here or not, but I want to end on a positive note. We've talked a lot about the suffering that's going out there, but I'm seeing a lot of green shoots out there. You know, I talked to Amir McLaughlin at Music Portland, who is organizing free music events, I think 80 of them in PBOT spaces throughout the city. Yesterday, the PSU announced that they're building the largest building that they have that's going to be devoted to the arts. Jordan Schnitzer gave $10 million for that. There's some public money coming that way also. That's going to be built out. The Keller Auditorium is going to be be remodeled or a new version of built somewhere, but it's going to be a beautiful space. Old Town is getting some infusion of money over there to help with small businesses. They're creating a small business incubator over there. Central East Side is going to get a music venue. The waterfront, there's some talk about development. We need to get a baseball team in here. That we can do that. You know, we're a major city. We can do a lot of major things. You know, we don't have to think small here. We can think big and do those things that people want. You know, get your kids out there, get some hot dogs and watch a baseball game. You know, we can do all that. And there's stuff that makes it seem like we're on the verge of, you know, kind of waking up from this hibernation that we've been in. We just need the fertile ground for those seeds to grow in. And so this election, I think, is key because all these things are coming up. The things that I just mentioned right now in the next few years are going to come online. You know, people will come back to Portland because people, you know, they love being social. They love going to great restaurants. They love catching some music. Portland has the most independent music venues in the country, not Austin, Texas, but Portland does. People will come out as long as they feel safe, as long as they feel comfortable, as long as they know that people that need help are being taken care of. And our city will turn around from this slumber that we've been in. Just, you know, they need some support. And that's why I'm running for office. And that's why a lot of good people are as well.
Vadim Mazursky for Multnomah County Commissioner. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, I appreciate your time. It's always great to be here. I appreciate the good questions.